The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Nearly every industry in the country has struggled to find staff in the post-pandemic era, with Fáilte Ireland recently estimating that there are 40,000 vacancies in tourism alone. Our reporter Elaine Smith has spoken to just some of those struggling to fill those job vacancies.
How are you finding recruiting and retaining bar staff at the moment?
It can be quite difficult, as sometimes it's too much for them to handle. So, you know, the jobs that we have to do can be very strenuous at times. You might have to go up to the keg room and lift a few kegs off each other and carry stock down the stairs, and this one person could be dedicated to running up and down the stairs constantly. And I find getting past that initial barrier of having to do the dirty work, let's say, can be difficult for some people, so they may not end up staying.
I see you have a staff wanted sign here outside your seamstress shop. How are you finding it to recruit and retain staff at the moment?
Yes, it is very difficult, because we need people with a skill set that can do the job properly. So some people will come in, they say, yes, I can sew, I can do this, but they don't have the skill set required for what we need. So it is very difficult to get staff at the moment.
So I see you have a vacancy sign outside the salon. How is the recruitment process going for you at the moment?
I must say it's extremely challenging. We were looking to hire staff for the last 5 to 6 months. There's just an overall lack of candidates on the market. I think there has been a significant shift in the hairdressing industry. A lot of hairdressers are opting to work from home. A lot have gone into different career changes as well. And the second is that a lot of people who are applying for the role are kind of looking for very flexible working arrangements and options.
Well, now to discuss how we can solve the recruitment problem that simply won't go away, we're joined in studio by Neil McDonald, CEO of Ismay, and Lorraine Heskin, CEO of Gourmet Food Parlour. And we'll be joined shortly on the line by Mary Conlon, Director of CIPD Ireland, the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development. Good morning to one and all. Lorraine, first of all, you're at the coalface. What's it like trying to find people?
Well, Pat, like everyone was saying there, it's difficult and it's challenging. It's been challenging for the last couple of years. So, again, really, the shortages are really down to the fact that there are staff who are applying for positions within businesses that are not qualified for the positions themselves, and that causes difficulty. And then obviously as well, there aren't enough staff out there to fill the positions. So everybody's in the same boat, so to speak.
So talk to me first of all about people applying for a job for which they are not qualified. Like in your business, the food business, like someone applying to be a chef when they have never cooked.
Well, it's not even that. It's more they're applying for a higher position that they've never experienced before. So really it's about, we spoke about finding solutions and looking for ways to move forward, because in the restaurant business, if you don't have chefs in the kitchen, you can't open your business, and then you don't have your revenue. And that's as simple as it is. However, it is about looking at very intense training programs for the chefs that we have. And quite possibly we have been in positions where we've had to hire people who need that element of training, and that's what we're focusing on right now. And also career progression within the hospitality industry as well. There is great career progression there, so it's about enticing people to come into the industry that we love so much, that we went into this industry, and I set up this business myself because I love hospitality, I love restaurants, and it's about explaining that to people and enticing them to come in.
Now, you've been in business, what, 16 years?
Yes.
So have you people with you who have progressed, like who came in as, if you don't mind the phrase, dog's body, and is now doing a very significant job?
Yes, absolutely, I do, and I'm very lucky. I have a fantastic team, and I've had people on with me, for the last 16 years. For example, I have a head chef in one of my restaurants that started as a kitchen porter. He progressed over, say, the last 7 or 8 years, and became head chef. I have a lady, Ruth, working in my accounts department. She started off as a waitress on the floor in the restaurants. We are very, very focused at, within our business, on that progression for people.
Now you asked another question. Where have all the people gone? Where have they gone?
Yeah, look, I think people have left the industry as well. I think people have moved into different sectors. I think, you know, a lot of people have moved home. And it's about resetting. It's about resetting the button again and getting people to come back into the hospitality industry. Because, look, when you love people, you love customer service, if you love food, you love all of that environment, it's a wonderful, wonderful industry to work in. And I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, over the last 16 years, we have, you know, we've now over 220 people working with us, wow. Pat. Very, very proud of that. It's still a struggle, but at the same time, and I've said this to you before, it's about fighting for your business and fighting to keep people in the industry.
What about accommodation? I mean, if you start at the bottom of the ladder, say you're serving in a restaurant or a kitchen porter, you're not going to have a mortgage, you know, so how do you afford to live close to the businesses, which by and large are going to be urban centred?
And that is another big issue that's cropped up, particularly over the last 6 months. And for myself, Pat, I have rented accommodation for staff to entice them to come and work with us as an additional part of their employment. For example, we've hired a wonderful chef who came in from Scotland and was really struggling to find accommodation. So we provided that accommodation for him. He started working with us. He's working out wonderful. That's just one example. So businesses do have to go that extra mile to knock down those barriers that are there for people who are looking for jobs.
Okay, well, you've certainly sold hospitality as a as a great career choice. Neil, the CEO of ISME, Neil McDonald, give us the global picture. I mean, where have all the workers gone? I mean, is it that we have so many jobs that we're virtually at full employment?
Well, that's it. Back to that question that you asked, Lorraine, Pat, don't forget our workforce is now at roughly 2.5 million. So it is at the highest level it has ever been in the history of the state. So the national labour force has been absorbed almost completely. So what we would say of the overall labour force, including those who are not at work at the moment, you can roughly categorise them in four ways. Those who want to work, those who don't want to work, those who can't because of some ailment or other that rules them out of the workforce. And lastly, but very importantly, because this we think this is a pool of untapped labour, those who can't afford to go into work because exiting the welfare system is too penal or too costly for them at the moment. So that last category of people is the only category, and we think it could be around 1% of the workforce. They're the only people available now.
Now, there is another category of worker nominally job seeking, but in fact in the black economy.
That's true, and that is Mary, who dialed, or sorry, your initial contributor there in the hair and beauty and grooming business. That is extremely prevalent in that business.
Like a lot of people who were working in salons, for example, because the salons were closed during the pandemic, a lot of them were freelancing at home. They got to like the idea, cash in hand, not having to go out the door, people coming to your house to get the hair done or whatever. And they just haven't gone back to legitimate work.
And it's not just those people themselves, it's their customers, Pat, unfortunately. So we've set up a new pattern of labour during the pandemic. The employers across the board in the grooming business say it is very difficult to get people to work more than a 20-hour week. And they all know that those people are working in the grey economy. And the reason we know that is because we can see when we interrogate the sales of the grooming products, nails and hair colours and so on, from certain suppliers, they not alone have they not gone down, they've actually gone up. So we
Why do you call it grey rather than the black economy? It seems to me it's pretty black. You're being kind.
Very kind, Pat.
Yeah. And we don't know whether the revenue commissioners are taking an interest in all of this, because they will have employment records of people who were in the legitimate economy and who've now departed.
I think it's safe to say that the revenue are now taking a view, taking an interest in that, Pat, because that's an established pattern of work that we've seen emerge over the last year.
Okay. Now, talk to me about that fourth category. I mean, the people who want to work and are probably looking for a job or between jobs, those who don't want to work, and we know we've come across many of those who can't work for ailments, as you say, and those who can't afford to go to work because they are living on the social welfare system, and to depart from it for the kind of job and pay they're being offered is not affordable.
They're not necessarily living on social welfare. So many of those people may be working a 20-hour week, a part-time week, but they're refusing to work full-time. And an interesting comment that Lorraine made, which we know is across the board, is that she's providing accommodation for her own employees. So a lot of people don't realise that the income limit in the rural areas for access to social and affordable housing is €25,000. In the extra urban areas, you know, the Midland counties, it's €30,000. And in the cities, it's €35,000. So there are actually very few jobs now that available that don't knock you above one of those categories. So we have a very large cohort of people who, because they feel they are not going to be able to get a mortgage, they simply will not take on a job that will break those income limits. And the other really significant barrier we have found, because people are telling employers about this, is access to medical cards. And this is especially important in those low work intensity households, especially for single mothers. If you're a single parent with one child who has a medical condition, if you earn more than €9,500, you don't qualify for a medical card. So that's such an extremely low income threshold.
So these are general rules, and of course you're talking about exceptional cases, and you'd imagine that the system would have enough nuance in it to cater for people like that single mother with a child with medical problems.
Well, unfortunately it doesn't appear to have, and so that is the feedback that our employers are getting. There is a cohort of skilled available people who just simply can't afford to go into employment because of the loss of those benefits.
So that needs to be looked at. There would be the fear, of course, of abuse. I mean, that's what people think, that you make the social welfare system more generous and people will abuse it.
No, we'd actually feel it's the other way around, Pat. We feel that it's the existing system that's, the revenue is losing a huge amount of tax, PRSI and USC because of what's happening right now. And if we can entice people back in by, for instance, relaxing the income limits for housing or the medical card or changing the way PRSI is levied, we'll actually attract in tens of thousands of workers.
Okay, now, Lorraine, I want to go back to you in terms of the quest for manpower. I've noticed over the last 10 years or so that when you travel around the country, as we do regularly on the programme before the pandemic, in many places you would not find Irish staff anymore. Mm. That people making up rooms in hotels, serving staff, bar staff and so on, might be from Eastern Europe, wherever they might be from. Mm. What about anyone within the EU has the right to work here, of course. But most of them have gone back and found gainful employment in their own countries within the EU. So what about visas, bringing people from areas which do not have an entitlement to come in?
Absolutely. And it's... At the moment, I'm struggling myself with some employees that I have working for me whose visas are coming up to expiration, whose visas have expired, who cannot now work for me, but are in Ireland and are willing to work. So it's very much a huge challenge right now. And the rules around visas are also very limited, and they're very, very strict. And it's difficult to see where there's an end to it as well. And particularly for myself, it's very frustrating when I have staff who are ready to work and are there and are in Ireland as well. So we do need to have a look at this. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
How slow is it?
It's very slow.
Because, I mean, one of the experiences we hear about all the time is that someone applies for a job, gets the job, then the employer has to go about sorting out the visa. Mm. By the time it's sorted out, should they've got another job where the process was not as tedious, maybe in their own home, country or whatever, they just say, to hell with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not enticing anybody in. And I spoke earlier on about reinventing the wheel and trying to encourage people into not just hospitality, but lots of industries. And the visa process is an extremely difficult one at the moment. I know for myself, I find it hard to see if there's light at the end of the tunnel with it, even though I've got very talented people who are willing to work.
One note here from a listener from Lucia. There's an army of workers available that is overlooked, retirees who would love to work. I mean, maybe in your business, I don't know whether you'd want retirees or... You know, do you require young and vigorous people rather than people who have retired?
I can still work, so I'm doing okay. But I think, we encourage anybody who's willing to work. And it's about, I think a lot of it is down to personality and goodwill between the employer and the employee and creating a positive culture within the business. So everyone's welcome.
All right. On that note, I'm going to talk now to Mary Connaughton, Director of the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, CIPD. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
I know you haven't been in a position to hear our conversation so far, but I'd like to get your sense of where we're at in terms of the labour force and why so many employers, often offering very good jobs and very good money, are failing to find applicants.
I think sometimes when we talk about this, we think into the individual employment and the individual job and forget to look at the big picture. And in reality, we're facing a growing economy. So our economy is growing this year as it did last year. And we are seeing a lot of employers come out and say they're trying to recruit. So that expansion means that there's much more demand for employees than we might be used to. So even, for example, our labour force is now up at 2.5 million in employment, and that's bigger than it's ever been since.
Now what about a cohort that had a very high unemployment rate, and that was the youth cohort? Have some of those young people managed to get jobs and keep them?
Well, interestingly, if you go back 12 months ago to May 21, the unemployment rate for 15 to 24-year-olds was 18%, and it was the highest of all the age cohorts. That has now come down to 4.9%, which is comparable to the general unemployment rate. So those people who wouldn't have been in employment last year, those young people, now have taken up employment. So we don't have that youth unemployment. Now, how sustainable those jobs are is probably still needs a bit more time.
But yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people in 0 hours jobs, you know, not quality jobs, if you like. They're earning good money now. And if you're in, if you like, the student category, that might be OK for the moment. But long term, it's not a solution. What about people who are, you know, employers might see as a bit fussy? You know, I want to work remotely. I want to be flexible. I'm not willing to come in and do a day's work. I prefer to spend the morning in bed and only work in the afternoons. I'm being deliberately facetious there, but is that having an impact?
It is definitely having an impact. Our research showed us that 85% of businesses were facing some kind of skill shortages back earlier in the year. And we know that that is forcing employees to change their approach to recruitment and retention to be able to hold on to the people that they have and to attract in new people. So much more recruitment conversations are around how people want to work, where they want to work, and how much time they want to spend in the office. And very much those decisions by employees around how they want to live their life is influencing their job challenges. And you were talking there a minute ago about, you know, how can we encourage more people who have retired to come back? Some of that is the lack of flexibility that they may have experienced in their workplaces. So coming back to actually, you know, if you have been looking at retirement and now want to take up some work, it's not necessarily full-time work 5 days a week, but it's opportunities to either maybe work over the winter months and not the summer months, or to work shorter working weeks or shorter working days. And there is a demand on employers to actually be more flexible in how they can actually support employees. So it is changing.
All right. Well, Mary, thank you very much for joining us. That's Mary Connaughton, Director of CIPD. Back to you, Lorraine. You can't make the quiche remotely.
No, definitely not, Pat. That's for sure. You can't. But look at, you know, I have about 35 people working in my head office as well. And, you know, I'm very happy to provide flexible or hybrid working environments for them. But there's a trust there. There is a trust there. And, you know, as long as the work is done, then it's no problem whatsoever. And I do understand that the whole work-life balance is very important to people and employers. I think what's come out of COVID and even post-COVID now is that is a very important factor to people, people's mental health. And focusing on all of that as an employer is very important as well.
All right. Final words from you then, Neil. This is a crisis and no end in sight, really.
Well, we hope that the end in sight isn't a recession that makes this an entirely different type of problem. We do think that there are some solutions, not a very large solution, but if we make it more attractive for people to exit the social welfare system, there's certainly access to a lot more labour.
All right. On that note, Neil McDonald, CEO of Ismay, and Lorraine Heskin, CEO of Gourmet Food Parlour, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.